is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
With Gordon Chang, my colleague and friend, we explore the recovery in China, not so much. Reuters headline, China's steel prices hit three-year low on demand woes. This is one way of looking at the China business plan. And then we welcome Ann Stevenson Yang, author of the upcoming new edition of China Alone, Return to Isolation. And a very good day to you. Steel prices, how does this connect to the claims by the Chinese Communist Party that they're in recovery from their COVID policy? Good evening to you.
Good evening. So, yeah, it's time for the China bulls to go back into the pen. I think it's finally very, very clear that there's no recovery. In April, my favorite statistic for April is that new housing starts were down 74% compared with the peak in December 22. So that's just no activity.
And the steel prices relate to that as well, because there's no construction going on anywhere in the country. They've been boasting about how their construction rate is ticking up, their completion rate. Is that not trustworthy information?
It may be trustworthy, but that means that, the developers are selling an awful lot less. It may be that some municipalities are finishing a few of these abandoned developments. I really haven't looked into it carefully enough. But steel overall, in fact, I would say that iron ore prices ought to be falling more. The issue is that a lower amount of recycling for the electric arc furnaces, because they don't have power for the electric arc furnaces, that's boosted demand for original iron ore. So prices look a little bit higher than they ought to be, but it's really a cratering situation.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting that copper prices have fallen dramatically in the last few months. That would be consistent with the pullback. Gordon, you have a question for Ann.
Ann, in April, China's imports fell for the seventh straight month, and I think it was eight of the last 9 months. Imports are important because they reflect domestic demand. And what we are seeing, I think, across the board is a Chinese economy that is having great difficulty. Do you think that the economy is growing, or do you think it's contracting, or do you think it's just stagnating around zero?
I mean, every number that I look at is in contraction, but I don't have an overall view. People got excited about the May holiday, but I would point out that the May holiday this year was 5 days compared with the comparable in 2019, which was 4 days. So naturally, it expanded a little bit.
And the Belt and Road Initiative, which I think we can associate entirely with Xi Jinping. I've been doing some reporting out of Africa and out of South America in these last days, learning to my amazement that the Belt and Road Initiative loans, the so-called debt trap, what seems to be trapped is the Chinese economy, especially the People's Bank of China. These are bad loans that cannot be repaid by the countries that accepted them. In some instances, the governments that accepted them have long since gone or have been condemned or ran away. That would be true in Ecuador. Let me give you an example in Ecuador. It's a troubled country where the violence is spiking, where the president will not run for re-election, where there are new elections due, and a former corrupt president, the man who made this deal with China, Correa, is circling around like a bird of prey. There's a dam called the Coca River Dam in Ecuador, a $2.7 billion project from China alone, entirely constructed by a China construction company. In other words, no locals were hired. They brought in their own team. The dam has something like 200 cracks in it. Will never achieve its expected hydroelectric power. But the walls of the reservoir are collapsing. The ground walls are collapsing because they did an inadequate job of assessing how it would deal with that weight of water. Sounds like that dam in China. We're looking at one bad loan out of a sea of bad loans. Is the general understanding of the Belt and Road Initiative now by those who keep numbers on China, do they see it as a catastrophe, or are they still waiting to judge it?
Well, I mean, I think it's a reflection of the type of lending that goes on within China. And this has happened because of the huge surfeit of capital, which they just had to figure out what to do with. And so they exported a bunch of it and did very little due diligence on the, or let's just say didn't care about the due diligence on the borrowers. So you have these, you know, massive loans to countries like Venezuela who obviously are going to go through a downturn. So, you know, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, there are all sorts of countries that are unable now to pay their loans. And China just kind of doesn't know what to do.
They're making emergency loans out of the People's Bank of China, which I'm told are not about helping the countries where the loans are going. They're about servicing the debt so that the banks don't get into a crisis. Are the banks in China transparent enough for us to know how they're doing?
No, John, but I don't think it's, I don't think anyone thinks that the government is going to allow the banks to fail. They're going to pour money into the banks to cover the lack of income from loan payments. But the effect that will have is to push the currency down. And we've already topped 7 to the dollar. I think we're going, quite a bit higher than that this year.
And you have a question for Ann Gordon.
Ann, how is consumption doing in China?
Consumption is very weak. I mean, even coming right out of the lockdown, you expected to see a big surge in travel and in certain restaurants and things like that, and it didn't really happen. And in March was a sequential decline from February, January, and I haven't looked at April yet, but the numbers so far in May have been pretty weak.
What is the explanation, if there is one, from the Chinese Communist Party, from the center, to the people of China who are experiencing this slowdown? Do they blame corruption? Do they blame the United States? Do they blame the COVID? Is there an explanation?
I think at the moment that instead of an explanation, the response is actually we're growing and actually we're going to grow more. So please be cheerful. They haven't really figured out what to do. The property problem, which lies at the heart of all of this, I think is not being addressed because how can you address it?
Gordon, we have another minute or so.
And another problem that's not being addressed, at least adequately, is youth unemployment. 20.4%, the most recent number. It's probably going to get worse. What are they going to do besides sending kids to the rural areas to farm?
Yeah, I find it interesting, Gordon, that they report that number, since overall unemployment is held to a really kind of ridiculously static number. They're clearly concerned about it. The expansion of the university system at the turn of this century put a big bulge in which the economy has not been able to accommodate. I don't know what they're going to do. Try to change the expectations of young people coming out of school.
And finally, you've been tracking China for many years. Is this the gloomiest you've seen of their prospects, or should we wait on that to see how the next year does?
Yeah, I mean, things were pretty gloomy in 2015, but there was still some ammunition left. I think the international economy is key here. So as the U.S. tightens rates and investment institutions become less interested in China, China has fewer paths out of this dilemma. And I think really this is the end.
So what we have here is a taste of the future decline while China claims that it's growing. That's next year then.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, this is really a very typical end of an investment-driven economy. It works, but it only works for a little while. And now we're going to see China growing under 2% for a decade.
Ann Stephenson Yang, she's the author of the forthcoming book about China Alone, Return to Isolation. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batchelor.